Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to talk about, you know, some hardcore financial stuff. As you know, listening to this program, I like to drag anything I can, kicking and screaming, into this program. If I can relate it to finances, then by golly, it'll be on this program if I can get a good guest or something I want to talk about myself. Well, today on the program, I'd like to really get into kind of a nuts and bolts core financial topic as it relates to investing. And at that topic in general is mutual fund investing. And there's lots of different types of mutual funds. And many people have asked me to talk about this. So I wanted to zero in. You know, we hear a lot about some of the big, quote unquote, brand name, the large cap stocks, the companies you know or you've heard of, you know, the GEs, the IBMs, the Apples, the Googles, the Exxons, all of these big mega cap stocks, these enormous companies with hundreds and hundreds of billion dollars of value, also called their market capitalization. But there's also a whole nother world, which is the medium and small cap, which is the smaller companies. And I'm not talking about the corner mom and top grocery store. I'm talking about companies by Wall Street standard are smaller, and maybe they're only worth $1 billion or $2. So that's the domain or the area of what's called small cap investing. Well, to help us understand it and understand how to maybe make that part of your portfolio, I have a gentleman on the line, Derek Pilecki. He is the founder of Gator Capital Management, and he has the Gator Mutual Funds, and that is the name of the website if you're curious and like to get more information, gatormutualfunds.com. Derek, welcome to the program.
Hi, David. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. I thank you for indulging that long setup, but I think it's important for people to understand why we want to talk about this. And just a little bit about Derek. He founded Gator Capital Management back in 2008. He manages the Gator Focus Fund, which is a mutual fund focused on portfolio of small companies or small cap companies. Prior to starting Gator, Derek was a member of Goldman Sachs Asset Management, their equity team, and he has been growing the firm and has done a great job. And he gave me a nice, strong number before we started the program. Assets are up to
about $104 million as of the end of May.
Outstanding. That's excellent for a fund, especially since you're focused on the small caps. That's outstanding. And Derek's had a background of portfolio management, did the Goldman Sachs Capital Growth Fund, and also focused a lot on the financial services sector. And so we're really glad to have you on, Derek, to help us understand it. So for our listeners, what is one thing that really sets apart the small cap stock investing as opposed to what they might be naturally more familiar with, the larger cap stocks? What's something that sets the small caps out as really being different, and perhaps what are some of the opportunities?
Well, I think one of the big differences with small caps is they're less followed by investors in general. So they're companies that they're not as familiar with. There's not as many Wall Street brokerage analysts who write research reports on them. They're not as well followed. And so there's some opportunity there because they're not as closely tracked. A lot of times they're fairly priced, but because there's less people following them, sometimes you can find mispriced stock.
So they could be the proverbial diamond in the rough.
Absolutely, yeah.
Interesting. Hunting for buried treasure. I like that. So what are some of the things that people should look for if they're looking to get into small cap stocks? And obviously, one of the things that I routinely talk to people about is diversification, which is why I like the idea of investing in, you know, mutual funds to give me that diversification. But just in terms of what people want to look for small cap investing in general, then we'll get into the mutual fund component. What about small cap investing in general? What should they look for?
Sure. I mean, I think when you approach caps, you have to approach it prudently because there's a lot of companies out there that are available to invest. And if you approach looking at the stock as if you were to buy the entire business and not look at it as a piece of trading paper to flip around, you think, okay, I could be in this company for 5 to 10 years. Would I want to own this business for 5 to 10 years? That's a good starting point to start to think about the stocks.
Okay. And then when they start looking at getting into them, and I know that this is kind of taking a peek, which is, of course, part of my purpose with this question, Derek, is you start thinking about which stocks to own. Do you want to focus in on a particular sector? Do you want to, again, make sure that you are getting a broad range of different exposure with, you know, the small caps, just like you would with other categories? Or are there certain sectors that tend to lend themselves toward the small cap investing?
Well, I like to think about it, about investing in stocks that I understand the businesses.
Okay.
So I focus a lot on consumer stocks and financial stocks because I've been a financials analyst covering the sector for 15 years. I understand financial businesses. And then, you know, we're all consumers, and we all have an affinity for going to the mall or restaurants, and it's easy to understand consumer stock. A lot of times, I like to look for businesses that earn high returns on equity or high margins, and they're able to do that because they have some kind of competitive advantage. And often in the consumer sector, the competitive advantage might be a strong brand or an advantaged product. And so I like to look at areas that I understand and companies with high return.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And so that's part of the screening process. And this will vary, of course, for different mutual funds and for different, you know, different objectives. But what do you think is an adequate number of, if we're looking to put money into a small cap mutual fund, which of course is what you're focused on with the Gator Focus Fund, what do you think is a good number of individual stocks for a small cap portfolio to hold to really give you enough of that diversification that is so often preached about?
Right. So in my portfolio, I hold about 30 stocks.
Okay.
I think, you know, there's been academic studies that say once you get to 22 to 25 stocks in a portfolio, you've reached the upper limit of the benefits of diversification. I like 30 because it gives me a nice round number, and I'm able to track that many companies. I may own 30 stocks, but I'll have 10 stocks that I don't own that I'm tracking that I could potentially invest in. So that's a nice number of stocks to be able to follow the earnings releases and monitor how the businesses are developing.
Interesting. So you'll have 30 in the portfolio, and then another 10 that are kind of in the bullpen, or they're in the minor leagues, and you might decide to replace one of the ones in the portfolio with one of these other ones if you see an opportunity.
Correct. You know, my portfolio does not have a lot of turnover. When I'm buying these stocks, my intention is to hold them for longer than 5 years, and so I tend to, of the 30 names, I tend to replace between 5 and 8 of them a year. And so the turnover is 20 to 25% a year.
Okay.
So
well,
of those
10
stocks, I'm not going to buy them all.
Right.
I might not buy any of them, but
right,
you know, they're there. I'm doing work on them.
Interesting. Very good. I like it. I think it makes sense. Derek, and I pronounced your last name correctly, Palicki?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Correct.
Very good. Derek Palicki is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. He is founder of Gator Capital Management, GatorMutualFunds.com. Gator Focus Fund, if you're curious, the ticker symbol is GFFIX, so GFFIX. And we're going to grab a quick break. We'll come back with Derek and dig a little deeper into the small cap stock investing. Stay right there.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we're back with Derek Palicki. He is the founder of Gator Capital Management. Talking to him about GatorMutualFunds.com. That's the website. And we dove in a little bit right off the bat. And I was eager. And let me continue my introduction to you of Derek. He also holds an MBA with honors in finance and accounting from the University of Chicago and a BA in economics from Duke University. So sorry to skip over that, Derek. I was so eager to get into our conversation, but that pedigree is certainly worthy of recognition. So we talked before the break, Derek, about some of the things that, you know, that you're doing with your portfolios and the diversification, and I like the approach. I was kind of caught myself kind of musing over your strategy, which I think is very intelligent, of 30 individual stocks that make up the portfolio, because that's, you can keep track of that. Do you tend to like to keep a kind of a, you know, if you're doing 30, obviously the math would say that you're putting 3% or so in each one of those, or do you tend to over and underweight them depending on what you think's going on? It isn't necessarily all or nothing then.
Correct, right. So when new names go into the portfolio, I try to put them in at 3.3%, so
okay.
30 times 3.3. And that creates a nice high hurdle. If a name's going to go in at 3%, I have to want to really own it. So it eliminates hobbies from getting into the portfolio. If a stock is in an interesting business but not the right price, I never say, oh, I'll buy a 1% position and hope it goes down and I'll buy more.
It either
goes in at 3% or it doesn't go in. And then I'm not one to trim or add to positions. So if you look at my top holdings, they've gone in at 3.3% and they've outperformed the rest of the portfolio.
Okay, well, you threw that out there, Derek. I have to ask then, what's your top holding right now?
Right now, my top holding is Targa Resources, and Targa is the general partner for an MLP with a similar name. And I own about 5 companies like this in the portfolio that where they're general partners of a master limited partnership. And they get to grow as the underlying master limited partnership grows, and they don't have to increase their capital to grow. They just benefit from the growth of the underlying company.
That's very nice.
General partners in generally are very good businesses. There's about 13 publicly traded general partners, and I own 5 of them in this portfolio.
Neat. Very good. And so the idea is the active management of these mutual funds, the active following of them. It's not a set it and forget it. Which, of course, is an enormous contrast between actively managed mutual funds and index or passively managed funds. There's obviously been a big increase, Derek, over the years of indexing and exchange-traded funds and these things. And obviously, you prefer the managing a concentrated portfolio of stocks. Give us a little bit more understanding about that approach and why it's superior, or why you believe in it. The results will determine which strategy is superior, but why this approach you think makes more sense?
Right. So there's a couple things about concentrated investing that are different from being more widely diversified. One of them, it increases the risk of the portfolio to being concentrated, because if you're wrong on your stock pick, you can have massive underperformance relative to your benchmark. But if you're good at picking stocks, or you go through a good streak where you're in sync with the market and outperforming, you can outperform by a larger margin. So I like that. My investors are, they have the option of investing in an index fund and matching the benchmark exactly. I think they're hiring me to outperform. And if I'm going to outperform, I want to outperform by as much as I can. And so holding a concentrated portfolio gives me that opportunity. The other thing about the concentrated portfolio is I get to focus more of the capital on my best ideas rather than my 50th best idea. So it enables me to focus on more of my capital on better ideas.
I like that. That makes sense. If I were going to manage a mutual fund, which I am not signing up for, I've got enough responsibility, but I like that approach. I would do it that way, because it you can really add value, and your threshold, which I think is a really interesting way of phrasing it, Derek, is that you're not going to nibble at something if you believe in it. If you don't believe it and it's strong enough to buy 3%, you're not going to buy it.
Right. It's kept me out of some things that would have just meandered along, where I get to focus on things that I really believe in.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, that's a sensible approach, and I think most people would find that to be logical. Is there anything that you think with the way the economy is growing or rebounding again from the Great Recession, which the recovery continues? Anything in particular about small caps you think that might might portend of a greater opportunity coming out of that or what may lie ahead of us?
Well, I think there's an ongoing opportunity with small caps. The companies can be more dynamic. They're smaller. There are growth opportunities are greater.
They can be more nimble, right?
They absolutely can. And I think I'm bullish on the economy. I think we're going to accelerate from here. More people are getting back to work. I think there's pent-up demand for household formation. I think people have been saving or not spending for the past 5 or 6 years, and they're getting tired of that. So I think the economy is going to get stronger as people gain more confidence. And I think that only portends great things for smaller companies.
Well, and
they
like,
are able to, yeah.
No, I was going to say, I like the idea of, and that's why I like the idea of having it as part of a portfolio with small caps. You know, small, mid, and large cap stocks, as you know, Derek, will respond differently to different economic conditions. But the thing I've always liked about having a small cap exposure is that they can be more nimble. And I've used the analogy, and I don't, maybe I need to do my research a little better, but I've always used the analogy of a small ship on the ocean versus the aircraft carrier that might take, miles to turn around and go the other direction. You know, if you're in a smaller boat, AKA like a analogy for a smaller company stock, you can turn around much quicker than that large ship can.
That's absolutely right. I mean, you can have regional businesses that expand nationally. You can have businesses that get acquired by larger companies. And you can have businesses that find a small market opportunity and are able to take advantage of it versus a large multinational conglomerate might see the same opportunity but think, oh, it won't add that much to our bottom line. Why bother?
Exactly. That's just not worth their even focusing on it with it because there's just not enough opportunity, whereas a smaller company could come in and exploit and explore and exploit that opportunity. Very interesting, Derek. Derek Palicki is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. GatorMutualFunds.com, Gator Focus Fund, GFFIX. We're going to grab a quick break. We'll come back and talk to Derek some more. Stay right there.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Derek Palicki is my guest. He is the founder of Gator Capital Management, GatorMutualFunds.com. And we're talking about small cap investing and the opportunities that may present themselves in the future and the sensible approach of having small caps as part of an overall portfolio. And a little bit about your fund, Derek. I'm curious. I wanted to ask you the focus on small caps and how you're doing it, the funds availability. Is there information on your website talking about how people, if they're interested, where they can get the fund?
Correct. So the fund's available direct from the transfer agent, and the contact information's on the website. And then we're available on a few brokerage platforms.
Nice.
Such as Schwab or Interactive Brokers, and the complete list is on the website.
Very good. And is it available as a no load, a load? How is it made available?
Yes, it's a no load fund. We have 2 classes of stock. There's an investor class of stock that has a 25 basis point 12b1 fee, and then there's the institutional shares. But the minimum for the institutional shares is 100,000, and if you intend to purchase more than 100,000, we waive the minimum.
That's very good. And so for investment advisors that are advising clients to put money into this and they're maybe managing the client's money for a fee, that's part of how people can access your fund and make it part of their portfolio as well.
Correct.
Oh,
yeah.
That's very good. That's very good. So if we look forward, I like the idea of the way you look at companies over a longer period, say a 5 or more year period for investing, and you look at the role that small caps can play. And I heard what you said before the break, Derek, about the potential for continued economic growth. Do you see this cycle continuing to build? We're seeing, you know, the economic data is strengthening. I guess what I'm looking for is, do you get a sense that this could definitely continue to build over the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years? I mean, there's talk of a, you know, a long period of expansion absent something really bad happening, but there's, you know, ongoing concerns about different aspects of the economy and also government spending.
Right. So the two hiccups right now are the first quarter numbers were weak, and it's been attributed to weather, and we'll have to wait a couple of quarters to see if that is in fact the case. And then the other uncertainty is, how is the Federal Reserve going to unwind its balance sheet, and is that going to just continue to be an overhang on the economy? I think people in the country are dynamic and entrepreneurial, and they'll be innovative and find ways to grow once we get people back to work and continue to move forward with employment growth and household growth.
And you mentioned the Federal Reserve. I'm glad you brought that up, Derek, because you know you've got several aspects to it. What they've cut the bond and mortgage buying down. What are we at, about a $25 billion?
Correct.
Okay.
The taper's down to
the taper continues. So we're down to, at the time of this program, I'll caveat, time of this program, we're down to $25 billion. So they still got to unwind that completely. But what you referred to is then this balance sheet that they've built up of bonds and mortgage-backed securities and all of this. My question to you, because it sounds like you're very tuned into it, and I think I heard something from Bernanke the other day on this, is there a need? Well, I guess, number one, is there a requirement, and is there a need for them to unwind those purchases that they've made as opposed to just letting them mature, you know, just taper out by maturing over time?
Right. I think right now the plan is to reinvest the interest and keep the maturities, and to keep the program or the balance sheet at this size. There's not even a plan to let it run off, let alone sell it down.
Okay.
But you know, the most healthy thing would be to let it run off and just amortize down through payoff.
And that brings me to a very interesting question that I'd love to hear what your thoughts are. Let's say they took that approach and they let it run off the way you describe it. Just let the bonds mature. And of course, it's a little bit of left pocket, right pocket. This is the U.S. Treasury, right, that's going to be paying these bonds back. And they're doing that from tax revenue, right?
Right, or refinancing.
Okay, yeah. Or refinance, they issue. Okay, so, but what happens is cash ends up instead of these bonds and such, that the Federal Reserve, and the balance sheet is what, like $4 trillion now?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So help me understand, Derek, what happens if over time the Federal Reserve ends up with $4 trillion in cash sitting in its quote-unquote coffers. Is that it? Do they, I mean, because this money originally was created quote-unquote out of thin air, right?
Right.
So
right.
Do they unthin the air? I mean, is there a way to, do they erase the money? I guess that's the question, is can they do that?
Right. Theoretically, they could. I think it's unlikely that they would. I think the money also can find its way back into the economy through the bank reserve channel.
So, ah, okay.
You know, banks are keeping these deposits at the Federal Reserve, and there's a few $1 trillion of excess deposits or excess reserves held in the form of deposits at the Fed.
So
and that can go back and become lending into the economy.
Okay, so they could push it out and get the banks to lend it out, and that, of course, also could be something to stimulate the economy.
Correct. I mean, I think banks want to lend, and they're a little hampered by the regulators and keeping very tight lid on the credit guidelines for new loans. But I think, in theory, the banks would prefer to loosen up a little bit and make more loans.
Very good. Well, we'll have to watch to see what plays out. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, check out GatorMutualFunds.com. Derek, thank you for being on the program. Derek Pilecki is our guest and has been generous to spend a little time with us. Derek, I wish you much success, and we'll be watching your performance and how things go for you. So thanks for being with me.
David, thanks so much for having me on the show today.
All right, our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.